Hey, this is Perry from Jeans Addiction with my man,
Eric Avery.
And it's been a pleasure to be hanging out with and speaking to the Vinyl Guide.
This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Hey there, everyone. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 387 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today, we've got some incredible guests on the show. Two of the founders of Jeans Addiction, Perry Farrell and Eric Avery, who are here to share lots of information and updates from the Jeans Addiction Music Workshop in Southern California. You'll hear updates on the latest recordings and the new material from the band, the music and influences of Jeans Addiction, the early albums, the censorship of Nothing Shocking and Ritual de los Habitual album covers. We talk about what else is in the Jeans Addiction vault and much more. Plus, we discuss the upcoming tour of Australia. The World is a Vampire tour featuring Jeans Addiction, Smashing Pumpkins, Amel and the Sniffers, Red Hook, and Battlesnake playing up and down the east coast of Australia. oneworldentertainment.com.au for dates and tickets. And make sure you get to the show early to see the opening bands. They are absolutely stellar, and we hope to see you soon. Oh, and by the way, I need a favor from each and every one of you. Please leave us a positive review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. 5 out of 5 stars, say something nice, and thank you in advance. And finally, we have nearly 400 other interviews and episodes ready to be enjoyed for free anytime. Interviews with the likes of Chris Shiflett of Foo Fighters, episode 382. Jason Bonham talking about memories of his dad and playing with Led Zeppelin, episode 383. Gerald V. Casale of Devo, episode 366. DJ, producer, and record collector Cut Chemist, episode 348. Robbie Krieger of The Doors, episode 306. Billy Friggin' Gibbons of ZZ Top, episode 293, and hundreds more. Follow the Vinyl Guide podcast for free in your podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. All right, everyone, here we go. Get comfy and let's start our conversation with Perry Farrell and Eric Avery of Jeans Addiction. This week on the Vinyl Guide, we are welcoming Perry Farrell and Eric Avery of Jeans Addiction to the show. Fellas, thank you so much for making the time. And I understand you're heading to the Australian shores very soon. The World is a Vampire tour is about to start. You guys excited about returning down under?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's been too long. I love your country. I honestly do.
Me too. I immigrated here about 20 years ago and I've never looked back.
And I love the animals too.
Yeah?
Eric, I was looking for a flying fox t-shirt for you.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, tell the story, would you, Eric?
Oh, the other day in a press thing, I talked about the very first time that we went over in 90 or something, and I was totally sleepless and turned around, and so I was up in the wee hours of the morning, and I just remember walking out of the hotel balcony at dawn, and I saw just a handful of flying foxes in the air coming across like it was a really tall hotel, and they came along right at the same level, and it was just like they were the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen at that moment, you know, and just like amazing creatures.
Yeah, yeah.
It's I'm incredible. Trying to find one in black.
That's charming, Perry. Thank you.
So what's something you guys are doing or planning for this tour that you've never done before?
Well, I can tell you that we've been writing prior to coming down there. And what we might do is perform a song that we have written and recorded. Of course, it's not finished quite yet, but we've been discussing performing some, you know, recording that some previously unheard material for you.
Ooh, wonderful.
Does that sound good?
That sounds amazing. Is this any hints as to what it, is this Embrace the Darkness or something different?
It's something different.
Oh. Entirely different.
Yeah.
And far better, I might add.
Okay. So look, there's been posts on Instagram, different recording sessions. That's been coming out here and there. What is happening there? Clearly you're recording. What is the project that you're moving towards right now?
You mean recording in terms of recording?
Yeah.
We're looking to do our fourth record together as the original team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An album.
Proper.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people these days, they talk about albums are dead, and they might be right, but just because they said that, we're going to make a fucking great album.
Looking forward to it. What's the sort of timeline that the band is thinking of? I know it tends to be a bit glacial. Are you thinking maybe this year?
Well, I think that, we'll only know when we get there because, you know, as Perry alluded to, I think today's day and age, it's not about having an album cycle and a particular release date and that sort of thing. So, you know, we have a couple of songs that are basically ready. We have songs that are right behind that in the process. And then we have beginning ideas and so we're going to come back from Australia. We're going to adjust to the time and then we're going to go into the studio and start recording. And so, you know, as for when things will drop, we'll see as we go forward, whatever the circumstances, you know.
Yeah, there's no label. So it's not like what Eric was saying was alluding to is, it's not like a typical record cycle and, you know, 6 months you start doing you're setting up the tour and then 2 months you drop your first single before the tour starts. None of that. We just want to put out another body of music because the beautiful thing about albums, when you listen to a great album, it's such an incredible experience. I mean, I can see you've got stacks of records behind you. And so you know what it's like when you pull one of those records out. It's going to set up your day or your night or your afternoon, whatever that is. You know, I like to play music when I cook, when I come down here, when I eat breakfast. I do that. You know what I mean? Like, there's always an album that goes with my meals, and that it takes a while to get into that sound and go on that journey. It's not like a quick pop track that you're just going to throw in a pile of plastic and it's going to turn into a mound of garbage. This is something that's going to be on your shelf and you're going to pull it out at your party that you're planning this weekend.
Look, I recognize the album will be done when it's done.
Couple of months. Give us a couple of months. As Eric points out, we've got enough material to work on. Now we've just got to put it in the oven, so to speak, you know?
Yeah. I would also say that it would be fair to say that I think that we could probably release something next at the end of this year, say. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether that's a whole record or it's a song or two setting up the next year or what, you know, whatever. We'll see when we get there. But it's sooner rather than later, I should say.
Excellent. All right. So you spent a lot of time in Australia, been here many times over the years. When you think of Australian music, what sort of bands come to mind?
What I think of right off the top, I mean, I want to go AC/DC, but I can't help myself to go to Nick Cave.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Birthday party.
Yeah, totally.
Were those bands and records that you had in your youth, ones that inspired you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were in the pantheon, of what we were shooting for. Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And still are in many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see birthday party for you, Eric.
What's that?
I could totally see you with a birthday party record.
That, now you got to get him a Flying Fox shirt and a birthday party shirt.
Yeah. Or a birthday party record.
So Jane's Addiction has such a unique sound. I mean, of course, in the original day and ever since, the influences, who are the influences that you can most hear in your music?
Well, it's funny because, you know, the two bands that Perry and I really connected with initially are Joy Division and Velvet Underground. And I think that you can hear the spirit of them in our music rather than an imitation of those bands in our music. You know, like we overtly said, let's take the spirit of those bands and make a new band. We didn't try to sound like them or pretend that we were them, but we took aspects of their approach and stuff, you know, this sort of the centrality and kind of the rhythm guitar aspect of the bass playing in Joy Division. I think that's definitely something that defines Jane's in a way too. And the reportage, like Perry's lyrics, mm-hmm. Lou Reed's lyrics, just reporting from the streets directly, that sort of poetry. You know, I see that connection there too. But it was always it was about capturing the spirit and bringing that with it. So
that's quite interesting because, you know, there's that saying, you know, Velvet Underground, their record inspired, you know, 10,000 people to go create a band. And in many ways, Jane's Addiction is the same way, you know, ground zero for much of the music that we've heard in the last several decades. How does the band reckon with the legacy at this point? I mean, are you guys romantic about looking back at it? Are you, you know, not worried about the past, just charging forward? Where are you at this point with the legacy of the band?
Well, I feel that I don't like looking back that much. If you look back too far, you might end up wearing the same top hat. And that's not a good look. I like to just continue to look around, just around, and then report. Like Eric said, you know, we came from the streets and it was an exciting place to be. The world has changed dramatically. 1991, World Wide Web, the end of the Soviet Union and Lollapalooza. So once 91 happened, the world really, really changed. If I do look back at all on anything, I get a little sad that, because I didn't think we had that much of an effect on the world as I would have honestly liked. I wish that we would have had at least more respect from the music industry. We didn't get that, but that's going to come when it comes. I don't really care about it. But the only thing that would be good about it is you'd have maybe better music. You know what I mean? Because people like to, they like to know that what they look up to is at least a success. And I don't think we've actually succeeded to the level that we will. So that's why I keep my head down and I just keep going forward, trying, and I never stop trying.
Yeah, and I feel like that we just, at least selfishly speaking, I feel like when I, because I do reminisce about the past, I think about life, the full spectrum of life, and at this age, I reflect back as well. But I just look at it like we have already exceeded my expectations of what I thought we were going to do. When Perry and I were first starting, we're talking about, hey, maybe we could go to Germany and maybe they would like us, or, you know, like, and we could, you know, play at the Olympia where, you know, where
Motorhead was.
And yeah. You know, And so I feel like this is gravy. I feel like we're now operating with a net. So let's try stuff. We don't have anything to lose. We have only everything to gain from the experience of our music now, you know. It's freeing to me to have that, the legacy, and to be also inspired by how proud I am of that music. Means that that's what I'm shooting for now. I'm trying to beat something that I've already done, but you know, but that's a luxury to have, I think, anyway.
Yeah. Huh. That's a fantastic attitude. And to your point, Perry, you mentioned something about not having the respect of the music industry. It's maybe not the establishment, but certainly the fans, right. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean the establishment.
Yeah, yeah.
The establishment likes to overlook us. But you know what? That's kind of cool, right?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. That's
might
what
not
you
have
kind of
the
want.
Other way. The only positive aspect of that is what I was getting back to is they did not look to get more of that Jane's vibe. They just kind of ignored it and went, just kept on their pop angle, you know, on their status quo pop or like status quo rock thing. I just wish we could have busted that up. You know what I mean? It's been like almost 25 years or 35 years. And in that 35 years, I wish that we would have had a better effect on the sound of music. But now my son, he's coming up and his band, they respect us. Mm-hmm. So it's coming. It's coming. I just have to, you know, I just got to wait a little while longer. That's all.
I always saw it as they couldn't copy it. It was
I was going to say a similar thing, because I was going to say one other read from what Perry was saying is also that we were idiosyncratic. We sounded like ourselves and like nobody else. And so in a sense, we're now here together again to create more of that now. Because right. A lot of other people didn't do that because we were kind of an idiosyncratic band. Like, not a lot of bands sounded like us because they didn't, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's a formula that they couldn't duplicate.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
When the four of you are back in the studio now, that je ne sais quoi is back. Yeah. I mean, how do you kind of define that? Like, how do you recognize that for Jane's Addiction?
Yeah. You know, it's actually back bigger, badder than ever. Cause you know, back in those days, believe it or not, like it was very difficult to make art because we didn't know what we were doing. And we surely didn't know how to relate to each other as men that were becoming famous. The fame thing, it just kicked our ass. But now we're at the age where we can accept the success, accept each other, and we've become, I think each and every one of us has become really intelligent and remarkable and kind. So I'm really just so happy that we're still together and we're going to go another few rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you asked in the question, like, how do we recognize it? And one of the things that came to mind for me is the fact that I recognize it because by the fact that by the relative ease with which the parts just come together and there's very little difficulty. It's just natural. And like one of the bass lines, one of the new bass lines is a bass line that has been with me sort of hanging about and not ever finding a home. And then I brought it to the boys and it just like went bing, song, you know? And that's just, and that's how I recognize that particular energy that we're able to sort of conjure together in, right. in our work.
They're puzzle pieces that uniquely fit together with just the four of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, really looking forward to seeing you guys down here in Australia. The band you're on the bill with, Amel and the Sniffers, have you had any time with them yet?
We haven't met them yet, although I almost met them. I went to see their show in LA with my son. And I, you know, knowing what goes on backstage, I didn't want to just bum rush them. But they put on a hell of a show. I mean, I was so psyched to see the scene is really starting to grow. You know what I mean? It's like, it's time. We had COVID, everybody went into a hole, and you don't know what these young people are going to look and feel and sound like when they come out of that hole. They're pissed off. They're raring to go. They're out of control. And that's what they sound like.
Yeah. They've got an incredible spirit. We're very, very proud that they're our fellow countrymen. There's a great music scene coming out of Australia these days.
Wait, so, where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from California. I moved here 20 years ago, though.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a very hard place to leave. I'm sure you know, yeah? You know, being in Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just such a beautiful country.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. So with the band after Ritual, as I understand the story, Lollapalooza started as a farewell tour for the band, but obviously it's become so much more, you know, culturally expansive. When Lollapalooza was first being planned, did you kind of have an idea that this was going to be a real cultural touchstone, or at what point did you realize that, holy shit, this is bigger than we ever dreamed?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay. Grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. When Lollapalooza was first being planned, did you kind of have an idea that this was going to be a real cultural touchstone? Or at what point did you realize that, holy shit, this is bigger than we ever dreamed?
Maybe 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, you don't make believe that you or I, you don't know. You know, like I say, I tell you, I don't want to say I fly by the seat of my pants, but just about.
With Jane's Addiction, the debut LP was on Triple X Records. That label, a small label out of Los Angeles at the time, was that album on its way? Was it being developed before or after the Warner's deal?
I think it was before, right? Or it was sort of during, right? We decided to put the record out ourselves. Is that right, Per?
Yeah. So we were being courted by every major label. And of course, you know, at the time we were thinking, wow, man, Warner's got Talking Heads, you know, Sire had an incredible roster. But Warner's wanted us to be on Warner's proper. Mm-hmm. And we were a little gun shy about that. We were being managed by these kind of, you know, green managers that were kind of hanging around the punk scene. They knew of us, and we did not want to be handled or managed like a big rock band. You know what I mean? Because we were looking at sub labels, indie labels like Slash Records. Back in those days, mm-hmm. we would have been real happy to be on Slash because X was on it. So when Warner's came forward and said that we want to sign you, and you know there were others that would have been very interesting. Even Motown came to our show.
Oh.
I actually thought that would be really strange to be on Motown. I considered it, but Motown that was out on the West Coast. We figured that, you know, Warner's would be the right one.
But I remember us knowing that MCA wasn't going to be it, but they were going to take us out to dinner, so we needed a free meal. So
exactly.
We met with them.
yeah, exactly. So we would take the free meals and listen to what they had to say, but we really knew it wasn't even about the money. It was about the people at Warner's. Mo Austin, Lenny Warnker, they were just, Steve Baker, they were just, as far as the music industry in those days, Mo Austin was the man. You know, he knew Frank Sinatra, and he brought that label from, you know, big band swing, Frank Sinatra, all the way up to Madonna and Prince, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I say, they introduced us to this man, Gary Kerfurst. He managed Talking Heads, The Ramones, Deborah Harry, Bob Marley. So we were in, but the deal was, before we do our record, we wanted to keep a proper recording of what we were like. And so we said, we'll do this, but first we want to do a live recording at a small club, and then we'll do the major thing. So that's how it went down.
So what was the impetus for that? Like the thinking behind it of, you wanted a document of kind of where the band was before okay.
Yeah. That energy, man, they could potentially squash all that goodness out of it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't let that happen. So that was the deal. We first do this live recording and then we'll do it your way.
Yeah. Now the covers for Nothing Shocking and Ritual, I mean, going into it, creating those, you must have known they were going to be controversial. Was it a surprise having to make alternative covers for those records?
Honestly, yes, it was. I thought it would be controversial, but I had no idea that Walgreens, Walmart, is going to start raising up their head and telling us what to do. I honestly thought, like, no, you guys will protect us, right? But at that time, Walmart, they had just formed Walmart, and Walmart was buying records like nobody's business. They were like out buying record stores. So, you know, the major label would have to their pressure.
Yeah, they kind of crept out of nowhere, that influence around that time.
Yeah, so, and then Tipper Gore came up right after that. Tipper Gore, the
PMRC,
Al Gore. And what is she doing telling us about our poetry and everything else? But that just happened. That was, who was the president? Oh, it was Clinton. But before that, Nothing Shocking, we had Reagan. So it was the Reagan era that we really came up in.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that also speaks to that thing that you came up with those images born from just a pure creative impulse. You weren't strategizing that you were gonna, you know, get this demographic or this marketing thing or this, you know, you just, you had a vision and you made them manifest in the world. And then the world reacted the way it did, you know?
Oh, thanks, Eric. Well, the only group I was trying to impress was our fellow artists, the artisans.
It worked.
Because if you can't impress them, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I really don't care about the status quo's reaction. I really care about the artists.
And those covers are, you know, have clearly stood the test of time. So when you handed them in to the record label, they were like, yep, okay, let's do it. And controversy came later? Or did anyone kind of, there may be a problem with this, guys?
Yeah. It went like that. I handed it in and I thought everything would be cool. I mean, people have done breasts, right? Throughout history, nothing special about that. Of course, you know, the vision, what came out of a dream when I actually saw those women on a swing and their hair were on fire and they were connected. So that was just a dream. Then when they wanted to censor it, I didn't know what to do. So I just kind of got angry and then put up the Second Amendment, right? Mm-hmm. Was it the First Amendment?
First Amendment.
So, Per, when did the, because part of the brilliance of it too was the twins on the rocking chair going this way.
Yeah. So
the vision was a swing. How did the rocking chair become involved?
Because, you know, on the end of Wilton, on Melrose, Wilton and Melrose, there was a series of Mexican woodworking shops that we would pass all the time on the way home. And I would put I wanted to build something that for them to sit on. And there was that store that, you know, Mexican carved wood furniture. And I just thought, well, if they're Siamese twins, they could go this way too. That'd be kind of funny. But you know what? It looks cool, but actually when you sit on it, it's not a nice feeling.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, it's a bummer because you feel like somebody's trying to catapult you out. It's not like a swing, but I could have made a swing, but it would have been a lot harder. I would have had to attach a swing into the ceiling. I shot the whole thing. I was living in a storefront that I transformed into an art studio, and it had pretty high ceilings. I just didn't want to mess around with the getting up there, and I wanted to be able to control the flame. So what I did was, the flame is actually a rubber glue, rubber cement, you know, like when you're in school, those rubber cement things that you pour in the back of a paper and then you put them down. So I just gobbed rubber cement on their heads, lit it up, and then ran back out and then took the picture.
Wow, amazing.
Do those sculptures still exist, either shocking or ritual?
Ritual exists. It's in storage still to this day. And one of the, you know, we have those storage units. All the musicians keep their equipment and everything. So it's still in LA in one of those storages. And the Nothing Shocking, I'm sad to report that there was a friend of mine who was, he didn't tell me, but he was homeless. And he ended up to live inside of my storage that I had. It was a personal storage unit where I kept them. And he was a crackhead. And he went and sold the sculpture to somebody for crack.
Oh, so they didn't even know it had any lineage. They just bought it because it was a
No. They knew whoever they were, I'm sure they still have it. But he went and sold it. So I don't have it. And besides that, there was this crazy person, I won't mention her name. Eric, you know who she is. She wanted to be a musician too, and she was hanging out with the group. She lived across the street from us when we lived together on Wilton. And we did this crazy party. Do you remember the party that we did Halloween night in Bel Air, Eric?
Oh yeah, right, right. On the
Chili Peppers performed
the tennis court.
On the tennis court.
Right, right.
Well, that guy, we all used to party up at his house. I won't say his name. He was a guy who made his money in technology, military technology. But he liked to hang out with people like myself and Eric. And like, you know, he was trying to date the punk girls. And anyway, this girl that I'm talking about, she used to go up there too, but he got tired of her and he wouldn't invite her to the party. That night that we performed that Halloween show on his tennis court, she broke into my apartment and she smashed the Nothing Shocking sculpture. She smashed their heads off. So it was kind of disassembled anyway. I had it in pieces. And then my friend went and lived in there and then sold it off for crack.
Oh.
But the rocking chair lives, right?
Yeah, the rocking chair.
Right, right. It was in rehearsal in the fall.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Oh, you still got that. You bring it around. Okay.
Yeah, it was such a like holy relic kind of thing. Yeah.
Cool. Now in recent years, the band's released a lot of recordings, demos, live sets. There's been various compilations. Is there something that's still in the Jane's Addiction vaults that hasn't been released that fans would just go ape over?
You know, I think Steve would have a bunch of stuff, a gang of stuff. Steve Perkins is really pretty much our
archivist,
documentarian. I don't know what you call him, but he started carrying a video camera around with him in the early days and going up and getting board tapes off of people after every show. So he's got stacks of material.
Right.
Excellent. Well, look, guys, I'm getting ready to wrap it up. Is there anything we need to talk about that we haven't talked about?
Not from my end. It was just a great conversation.
Oh, great. Glad you enjoyed it. And I'd love to have either of you back, because I know there's lots of in-depth stuff we could do, talking about the Iggy album, talking about your work with Avalanches, Perry. But, for now. Yeah.
Thank you for mentioning Avalanches. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, Eric, Perry, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing those stories and talking about some of those what I consider very historical kind of things. I'd love to, Perry, you mentioned, respect from the establishment may come in the future. I'd love to see the Ritual and even parts of the Nothing Shocking dummies someday in the Smithsonian. That's a dream. We'll put it out there. We'll see if it happens. I do want to remind folks, especially those in Australia, the World is a Vampire Tour coming to our shores April 15th through 30th. Jane's Addiction with Smashing Pumpkins, Amel and the Sniffers, Red Hook Battlesnake, oneworldentertainment.com.au. Fellas, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide and safe travels. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave.
Oh, that was fun. I'm so glad those guys could make the time for us to ask our dopey questions. And I hope you had fun and enjoyed it, and we hope to have them on again soon. So, in the meantime, do us a favor. Leave us a positive review on your podcast app and share these episodes in your social media. That's always huge, helpful, and greatly appreciated. That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. You know, we literally have hundreds of other episodes available. So if you enjoyed this interview and you want to hear more, just head over to your podcast app, follow The Vinyl Guide podcast. You could scroll and download and listen and enjoy literally hundreds more episodes. Thanks in advance, and we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.